Who is Todd Genetasio? That sounds kind of weird to say about myself, but after 23 episodes, we are diving into what I've learned over the last 10 years running a marketing agency in this modern world of content creation, right here, right now, on Air Brands Live.
You're now tuned in to the On Air Brands Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the On Air Brand Show. I'm Todd Genetasio, along with my new recurring guest host filling in for Amber Furman. It is Mr. Mike Hamm. Mike, what's going on today?
Todd, it is so good to be back, man. And I'm really excited for this topic because, like, I thought of it.
I feel like
it's a lot of pressure, you know, because to come on here, because I know that you put a lot of effort into actually scheduling these episodes and planning them out and all that kind of stuff and giving the people what they need. And then I was like, well, I mean, I may have had a couple drinks. Todd and I have talked about this before.
You're trying to take credit, but what was actually, what, let's talk about the brand. What were you drinking? What's the source of inspiration here?
It was, it was a little Four Roses bourbon.
Okay.
So we were feeling pretty good. And,
#not sponsored.
Yeah, no free ads. And, you know, it was one of those things where, like, I had just had, you know, the day, like the prior week, you had me on the show and we talked about the buy me a coffee thing. And then that day that I texted you that night was when I was down with Eric and Josh at the pod, you know, the On Air Brand Studios, PodMax Studios, and was there with them. And I was like, you know, like, I'm really getting to know Todd on a much better level. I feel like the people need to know about Todd. So I was like, you know, hey, man, you know, you up? And then started, you know, sending you some texts about what I was thinking about this episode. So, but I'm excited because I do think that you have a lot to share. Obviously, you know, you just mentioned 23 episodes in to the On Air Brands podcast. And I think that so far we've given the people a lot of stuff and given them stuff that's, you know, relevant to them and can help them in their marketing journey. But now, like, I think that really kind of give you a chance to shine because you're always the guy driving, when you're the driver, sometimes you don't necessarily have the creative control to kind of like really let yourself shine. I mean, maybe that's just me, but, you know, why I think this is going to be great.
I appreciate it. I will hop on the opportunity. And what I love about the serendipity of the topic being inspired by your fancy Four Roses bourbon is that
it's a $20 bottle, by the way. I don't want anybody to think that I'm, you know, like a high class broad. You know, like I'm, you know, we're
cheap date here.
Yeah, right. Well, cheap if you date. Buy that much, you got to keep it.
Yeah. And so when I originally got into the whole digital content creation game, this was back in 2009, and for Christmas, I was given a flip camera, which I keep here for nostalgia reasons, right?
Wow.
Now, you're a little young, Mike. I don't know if you remember these things.
I remember those.
You know, and these are, you know, the video camera that fit in your pocket was the first one. It was before GoPro, before iPhones had cameras on them. I get this thing for Christmas and just loving it, geeking out. And after about 5 minutes of excitement, live shows, you know, that'll happen. After about 5 minutes of excitement with this new camera that I've never had in my hands before, it's like, oh my God, this video camera fits in my pocket. I can't believe it. Then my roommates and I look around and we're like, well, we're not really actors or directors or any interest in that field whatsoever. We're not Josh Carey, right? We're not out here making movies. And YouTube had just kind of gotten off the ground a little bit. There's no video on social media or anything. And we're like, you know what? We're in our mid-20s. We're drinking a lot. We're eating a lot of meals out. We're putting on the pounds. We wanted to learn how to cook and save some money and eat a little bit healthier, relatively healthier, not super healthy.
Of course.
You know, let's pump the brakes. You know,
we don't want to get carried away. Honestly. Yeah.
We don't want to get carried away.
Yeah.
And so we decided that we would head over to Bottle King and pick up the fanciest $11 bottle of whiskey. So you're double.
Yeah.
Where
I'm double as fancy. Well, I'm 30 now, so like I'm a little bit more advanced in my age.
Yeah.
Than you at that time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, Heaven Hill, I think Heaven Hill or Heavenly Hill, I forget. I'm not sure if they're still around, but, you know, they can throw some sponsorship dollars to us if they want. We basically would split this bottle of whiskey and I'd record my roommate cooking. He'd record me cooking. We basically would just, we're getting hammered and cooking. And then I, similar to you, just hopped in iMovie to chop it down into like a 5-minute little video, put it up on YouTube. I'm a geek and I put up a website for it. And that was pretty much the gist of it. Every week we'd just get drunk and figure out how to make something different. Meatloaf, chicken parm, you know, French toast, whatever. And after a couple of weeks, I get an email from YouTube that says, you know, so-and-so commented on your video. And I'm like, oh, you know, hey, Greg, who's this guy who commented? You know, he says, I don't know who that is. I'm like, well, who would comment on our video? This is, you know, no one's watching these.
Yeah.
And so then I looked at the stats and it was like we had thousands of views in the first couple of weeks. And so I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? Right. And turns out that by creating multimedia content that was answering a question like easy meatloaf recipe, easy chicken parm recipe, we ended up at the top of Google for all of these key phrases. And we published about a dozen of them. And we were literally, if you Googled easy recipes, we were at the top.
Yep.
And that's really when it clicked for me that by creating valuable content and putting it out in an easily digestible way, that you were going to be able to, you know, gain visibility online and start attracting an audience of people.
Yeah, well, I think that's such an interesting tidbit of information for the people listening, because essentially, you know, you put yourself out there, knowingly or unknowingly, you put yourself out there just to do something fun and, you know, make some new recipes and have a couple drinks with your friends. But then, like, you fell ass backwards into actually hitting some, like, algorithms or whatever, like some key search phrases and all that. And, you know, I think that a lot of times when people are, like, getting into the marketing aspect or of their business, or whether you're marketing a podcast or you're marketing whatever it is, I think a lot of times people are a little bit hesitant because they want to, like, hit that perfect episode title. They want to hit that perfect, you know, marketing keyword phrases, all that kind of stuff, like, you know, packing different hashtags and buzzwords and all this other kind of crap into these things. But all you did in that moment was show up. And now I'm sure, just because you are an expert now, it has become a little bit more refined than just like, you know, doing what you were doing. But I think that that's a really good point, especially, you know, in a lot of the stuff that we talk about within PodMax, On Air Brands. We've had conversations before about it, you know, about just putting the stuff out. You know, like, I mean, obviously there's, you know, efficient ways, there's all that kind of stuff to get your message, get your marketing materials, get your, you know, ideas out into the world. But at the same time, they're not going to get out into the world unless you hit submit or post or whatever.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think that that's a really good takeaway from that story, is that you just did it. You didn't know what you were doing. You didn't know what it was going to become, but you just did it. And I think that that's just a fantastic, you know, representation of what I think is the key piece of marketing, is to get it out. Get it out there.
Exactly. And, you know, what's happened was, so it was coincidence. We got lucky in this coincidence, but it holds true, you know, 12 years later, that still the strategy is, how do we show up to serve the audience something that they're looking for and is going to add value to their life, right? That's that question. Every business should be asking that question, right? And that's the, and that's how they can go about their marketing, because the best marketing strategy is be helpful to the people you want to serve. Right. And that was, that just happened to be what we were doing. We, you know, when we talk about what do you need for your marketing strategy, you know, you need to clarify, you know, a clearly defined audience. You need to understand, you know, how does that lead into your offer, and all those kind of things. Now we just, this was the coincidental part, was that we were the target audience, right? So it was just 25-year-old guys who wanted to learn how to cook. So I didn't do any research. I just kind of lucked into the fact that I personally would have typed in easy meatloaf recipe. And so without outsmarting myself, the title of our video on YouTube was easy meatloaf recipe. Right? Yeah, and that's right. And that's what people were looking for. So we were the target audience, and that was what put us in the position. Because if we sat down and I tried oh man, we should come up with some clever name for this meatloaf and blah, blah, blah. Like, no one's looking for clever names, right? Yeah. It doesn't have the standing power of those things. It's like, keep it simple,
right?
You know, clear over clever, and put out stuff that your audience is looking for help on, and you will get found.
Right. And I do want to like dive a little bit with that, because I think you mentioned several times in that answer, which I think is perfect, because I had this question written down, and you know I don't write questions down, but I needed to ask this. I think one of the things, especially with people that, you know, whether they're running a business, whether they're starting a podcast, whether they're doing whatever, the audience is key, because yeah. that's who is going to consume your stuff. So obviously, you know, you were your target audience at the very beginning. Yeah. So, but over time, you have, I'm sure, refined your ways about how you identify who that target audience is. So what are some ways that you do that? And then we'll get into a little bit more about how you work on engaging with that audience, because that, to me, is the most important thing. If you could have, you know, a million followers on a particular platform, but if yeah. you get 1,000 likes, that's not great. But you right. could have 1,000 followers and get 600 likes on a particular post. That's way better. That's a more engaged audience, and a more, especially from like, if you even talk about like influencer marketing, that's probably a better, you know, account to kind of hitch your wagon to, just because they have more engagement. They have a more loyal community. So how do you find that community and find that audience? And then how do you make them engaged and connect with you and that brand and that message?
Yeah. So it starts off, you know, you'll hear a lot when you talk to marketing people about you need a persona or an avatar, right? And then they pull up this questionnaire, or you download these worksheet templates of the, and it's got like, you know, a little fake profile picture. And then you're filling in these answers about a person. The problem with starting with those is that, why did you pick this person to describe as your avatar? Like, is that arbitrary? Like, how did you come to that decision? And so where we start with everyone in our training programs that we offer and with our clients is not with like, who's the avatar. We take a step before that, because you could pick the wrong avatar if that's where you start, because there's no context. So we start with, okay, what is it that your business does? And like, what problems do you solve? And what transformations do you create? What's the outcome that you provide, right? Like, based on the business, what problems are you solving? And then we make a list of, okay, who are all the people that have that problem? And then we kind of prioritize it based on who's in the most pain because of this problem, who wants to solve this the most, and who has the budget to solve it, right? And the time and attention. And so a story that I like to tell about the power of this is, a couple years ago, we were working with a new client, not a couple years ago, it was in the middle of the pandemic. And they were, they offer this compassionate training online program. And they were talking about who would be good people to go after. It was like, well, you know, the people who run healthcare places, hospitals, et cetera, would be great, because this is, you know, something that would help them, blah, blah, blah. And what they said made sense. And it was like, oh, and they have, you know, hospitals have huge budgets to get this thing done, so that, you know, that wouldn't be a concern. And then when we look down, we say, who wants to solve this now? And who's able to solve it now? Well, in the middle of the 2020 pandemic, hospitals weren't really prioritizing, how do we get some extra training to keep our employees a little more compassionate? They had other things that they needed to solve at the time. And so, although if we would have started with who's an avatar we want to go after, we would have started with the people running hospitals and gone through this whole thing. We would have launched campaigns that maybe would have been great at some other time in history, but they would have fallen flat because that's not a priority for those people. So before choosing and defining your audience, we like to start off with, what are the problems we solve? What are the outcomes we create for people? Who has those problems and who wants to solve them now? And then that's how we define it. And then you go out and you build out an avatar profile, so you understand what they're thinking, where they're hanging out, where they're putting their attention, and how you can engage them.
Right. So then the other follow-up question to that. So once you actually have that audience defined, like I mentioned before, there's just, I mean, I am not like a marketing professional. Mm-hmm. I do marketing because it's part of my job. And, you know, it's not as detailed and as in-depth as you're going into with your clients and with what you do. But I think that one of the things that's most important with a lot of these things is what we were talking about before, the engagement with that community.
Right.
Because, you know, a lot of times if you put up like a commercial on TV or if you put up a billboard on the road, that's a one-way type of thing. But yeah. to me, especially like in this space that I'm in now, whether I'm in sales, you know, selling title insurance or doing this, doing the show or here, it's the talking back from that audience that makes them feel like they're part of this overall message. So how, what are some maybe ways or talk to me about the importance of getting that engagement from that community?
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right, because modern marketing is about a dialogue, not a monologue, right? Like commercials, those are, they're just blasting out messages. There's no feedback loop, right? They're just, they're in a volume game where if we spend enough money, if we reach millions of people hundreds of times, eventually when it's time to buy a refrigerator, they're going to buy our refrigerator. Which is funny, because I was actually listening to a podcast this morning that was talking about this, and that the podcast is with Jenna Kutcher. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she's got a big online business. And so she's in the online world. She's a podcaster, content creator, personal brand, all that stuff that we talk about that's very powerful. But when she was telling a story and praising the story, because she said brands need to have personality so that they can engage with their audience. Check. I agree. Right. And she says, like this commercial that I saw, I really loved it. It was for these refrigerators, and they hired Dax Shepard and Kristen Bell to be in the commercials. And I love how the brand put personalities to the brand, because now, you know, I like Dax and Kristen and their personalities, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, yeah, it was so good. She's like, oh, man, I forget what brand it was, but they did a great job. Okay, pump the brakes. How did they do a great job?
Right.
If you don't even remember who they were, great. You were praising that they hired these two famous people, which got attention and they got your engagement, but you don't even remember who the brand was. So, you know, how good was it? And right. So what we look at is, how do we go deep with an audience and build a relationship, right? Not go wide and hope to catch a little bit of attention. And how long are commercials? 20 seconds? Like, you know, it's
right.
And so we look at, how do we get deep engagement with our audience, not how do we reach a million people and boil the ocean, right? And how we do that is by, you know, having a clearly defined audience that's not the masses, right? But how can we get into a more detailed, you know, niche or vertical that we want to go after? Because one, it will help us narrow down and spend money more efficiently and effectively when it comes to actually promoting our content. But the content that we're creating will resonate more when we have a specific type of person. And, you know, a kind of general example that people will understand is, if you want to sell marketing services to a doctor and you tell the doctor, we're going to help you get more clients, that doesn't sound right. Well, you say, we're going to help you get more patients, even if everything you do and say would be identical if you were talking to a lawyer and saying clients, or talking to a doctor and saying patients, but the difference is huge in how it resonates with the people you're talking to. And so that's the importance of understanding who you're talking to, choosing. And if you want to target doctors and lawyers or two different types of people, great. But you're going to need two different messaging sequences to be able to do it in a way that gets the right engagement. And it's not just a million followers with 10 likes as opposed to 1,000 followers with 600 likes.
Yeah. And then that's, I think that's a great point too. And I think we talked about this on when I came on with you 2 weeks ago, like the BS meters, because like you're talking about, you have, you know, if you said clients to a doctor, he'd be like, this is, you know, they send this out to literally everybody and their mother,
right?
You know, but like you craft it in such a way, it's a one word difference, but it makes such a huge difference. And taking the time to really start to try to engage with that community is super important, you know, because it makes them feel like they're part of that. And it makes feel like it, even though they're probably sure that it's an automated message, it still makes sense and still connects with what it is that they're trying to do. So, I think that, I mean, all that is great. And I've noticed too, you know, just from a podcasting standpoint and trying to do some different things, whether it's like Instagram stories with the polls and trying to get some engagement that way, I didn't realize the level of engagement that I could get, you know, prior to that, because for me, a lot of my earlier, you know, attempts at marketing the show and marketing myself was just a lot of that monologue stuff, like you were talking about. It was me putting up posts. It was me, you know, just, you know, like maybe commenting back if somebody commented, but there wasn't there wasn't the social part of social media, which is very important. That's why it's called that, because it makes you engage with those people. And then when I started doing some different things, whether it was, you know, voting on new podcast cover art, whether it was, you know, just answering different questions, all of a sudden I was like, holy cow. I mean, like, I actually have an engaged community that I did not even realize existed, you know, and then, you know, the next step for me was like, now what do I do with this? You know what I mean? So maybe I should talk to somebody like you, but, you know, that, well, that's just such an interesting idea. It's just like, once you start engaging, I feel like people will be surprised with the level of engagement that they're going to get out of that.
Yeah. And I would also say, don't be nervous or scared if you don't get people actually engaging in a visible way. But what I say, mind the lurkers, right? So a perfect example is we just got a new client on Monday who I got connected with online and coincidentally offline about 2 or 3 years ago. And we're friends on Facebook. She's, as far as I remember, never liked or commented on anything I've ever posted. But she's in the market for an agency to help her grow her business online. And she called me and now we're going to be working together. And so it, even though she has never replied to any of the emails I sent to my list, she's never she's never liked or commented or shared anything I post on social, but that consistent visibility and demonstration of expertise is what then, you know, it was almost invisible engagement, right? Like, she was mentally engaging with the stuff I was putting out. It was helping in these little ways over time. And then when the time came that she needed what we do, she called us up and we actually, you know, we beat out some pretty big names that she was also talking to, which is super cool. For me, you know, ego boost, but that's that invisible engagement, I think, is something people give up on too quickly because they're not seeing people like or comment. But I've gotten, you know, plenty of business off of people who have seen me on social, have told me after the fact, I love the stuff you're putting out. Like, I get, my LinkedIn engagement is trash. It's horrible. But I've gotten clients who I met years ago will email me and we'll start doing business together. And they're like, you know, I always see your posts on LinkedIn. And, you know, so when we needed a new website, you're the guy I was going to call. I'm like, you see my stuff on LinkedIn? I'm like, it tells me that it's 75 people saw my post and no one's ever liking these things. Like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So let's take that a step further, though, because I think, you know, you said mind the lurkers and don't freak out if you have little or no engagement. Mm-hmm. And I think that with marketing, especially, you know, if you're working with people that, you know, maybe, you know, startup companies, if you're working with, you know, maybe entrepreneurs or people that are maybe new into the foray of marketing, obviously the point of a business is to make money. That's like, right. I mean, I have an MBA and that's the one thing that I took out of those classes was have a business needs to make money. If it doesn't, it's not going to succeed. Boom. Yep. Very simple. Yep. You know, there's your tuition dollars right there. But, you know, I think that from a marketing standpoint, and we talked about this the last time I was on, you know, I did not see any results really immediately, which led to uncomfortable conversations that I had to have, because that's what social media and, you know, that kind of content marketing is all about. But how do you weather the storm early on to kind of get through? Because not getting, you know, likes on your Instagram post is one thing. Spending money and then not getting that money back in return immediately is another thing. And I think that that's something that would freak people out, no?
Yeah, yeah, totally. And what you have to go in with a mindset of, this is a 3-month experiment or whatever it is, right? Like, you have to set a timeline and give yourself, you know, give yourself the permission and runway that there's going to be time. And like, we've had clients in the past and we're getting better communicating this in the pre-sale conversations too, where if the typical sales cycle for what it is you offer is 18 months and you run a marketing strategy for 2.5 months and don't get any clients, you shouldn't have gotten any clients. It takes 18 months, right? Like, and so I've seen that over and over again, you know, over the years where, you know, and look, I get it, especially, you know, when you hire an agency and, you know, you're paying a lot of money every month to grow your business. You have to look at, you know, and what we do is we look at the kind of milestone key performance indicators, right? So it's like, all right, it's not dollars back in sales, but here's the 4 milestones along the customer journey, and we need to be hitting these. And here's our baseline metrics that we want to hit, right? So knowing what kind of numbers you want to see out of things as a lead up, it's like, you know, if you step up to the plate and you get a single, is that bad? No. Didn't score a run, but you got somebody on base. And right. Now you got to move, you know, now you got to advance the runners from base to base so that you can score. And so you have to know, am I striking out or am I hitting singles? Right. And when you kind of have that understanding and you know, all right, we're getting runners on base here, then things are going to pan out okay, because you're making things happen, even though the runs aren't on the board yet.
Right. Yeah. So it's funny that you say that too, because like, you know, a 3-month timeline or the 18-month sales cycle, all these kinds of things. So when you're putting together these marketing plans, and you know, this kind of goes into what I was mentioning before about like how I would try stuff, and like I just get very antsy, you know, and it's like, this isn't working, we're gonna go do this, you know, or this is working, we're gonna do it, and then as soon as it doesn't work, we're like, all right, that's done. Next, you know, like to throw the stuff against the wall, see what sticks. But I'm just like literally like all day just throwing stuff, you know, and if it doesn't stick the next day, we stop doing it. But at what point do you need to like? Is it, if you're in going down that marketing road and you're saying to yourself, okay, let's just take a 3-month example. We're gonna take this 3-month example, and you realize that maybe, obviously not with you, but with another marketing agency, all of a sudden you are striking out because maybe you don't necessarily have your message clearly defined, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, or your audience clearly defined, or you didn't do like you thought it was one thing, but actually it's shifting gears and going down something like a different audience or a different message you need to be putting out there. So are those situations where maybe it's a case by case basis, and you can tell me and we can move on, but is that something where you need to be like maybe like small tweaks, or is that something that, you know, you have to like blow up the system and start again and do like a new 3-month span? So like, how do you kind of approach those types of situations?
Yeah. So everybody obviously does things a little differently. The way that we approach it is we start all of our engagements with what I call the minimum launchable funnel. And we eliminate all the noise, all the BS, and we just say, how do we get the car on the track right away and start driving? And then we can steer, right? Because you can't steer a parked car. So we launch and we run tests, essentially we run 4-day micro tests to test audience targeting and messaging. And so out of the gate, that's what we say. All right, the first month, we want to test a couple different audiences and a couple different messages and see which one gets the best performance, not performance that we're getting sales, but which ones get the highest click-through rate, or what's getting us the lowest cost per 1,000 impressions or whatever, right? Like we look at those first initial metrics to see, okay, now we have the audience dialed in and we know the messaging that is going to make them feel compelled to take some kind of action and click over and learn more, or to watch a video, or to take that first step in the customer journey, right? And then that's where we do our work, is in that first month of launching, is we test a couple different types of audiences and messages. So now that we know, okay, we got this kind of locked in, now let's go further. Let's invest a little more. Let's build out some more things, but we don't build out other components. We don't spend more money in scaling the reach until we know we're doing that with the right audience and messaging already in our pocket.
Right. Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about, like, we're talking about messaging, we're talking about, you know, crafting a story, you know, like, I think that's really what it kind of comes down to, because, you know, again, BS meters finely tuned. Yeah. So we're talking about stories. We're talking about how people can sniff that stuff out if it's not, you know, authentic, if you want to use that buzzword or whatever, you know, like, so talk to me about the importance of clearly defining that message and maybe some key ways to define that message. Because we talk about the audience. Now that you have your audience defined, like, how are you going to talk to them? Like, you know, what are the key things you got to do?
Yeah. Here's what's cool about today's world with social media versus, let's say, commercials or whatever, is that the way that consumers, buyers, people behave is a lot different than it used to be. One, attention spans are shorter. I don't know the current statistics off the top of my head, but, you know, whatever. People are goldfish. And but the problem is, depending on what you sell, if you don't sell a commodity, right? Like if you're not selling packs of gum or some $40 e-commerce type of, you know, whatever, but if you sell, you know, a higher price product, or you sell some kind of services, then people need to have a relationship. They need to know, like, and trust you. And that can't come without time. and we can't really speed up time, but what we can do is increase the frequency in which people are seeing us. And that's where we go back to, like, okay, what are the problems we solve, and who's the person that we're targeting, our audience? What's their life like? What kind of questions do they have? And when you have an understanding of, like, here's the top five questions that they are thinking about, here are the three biggest objections that they have when they're going through this buying process with these types of things. Here are some mistakes people are making when they're going through the buying process for this. Here's the mistakes they're making when they're trying to solve the problem. So then you rattle off. I mean, with what I just gave you, that's 25 different social media posts. And right. If you take those 25 posts and 25 messages, right? If we put them into emails and social media posts and you set up, and like I said, I like to go deep, not wide. It's not about millions of people. It's about hundreds and thousands of people getting through the entire customer journey. And so if we take this 20 different messages and we start sprinkling them out and we put $2 a day behind them on Facebook so that they're showing up on Facebook and Instagram for people, and we get people opted into our email so they're getting a dripped out email sequence over the course of 30 days. Well, what happens here is they're seeing us frequently. So we are compressing the time to create a relationship because they're seeing us more often. They're going to see us in at least three different places, Facebook, Instagram, and email. So I've heard, I have not read the book. It's, is it called The Pickup Artist or something like that? It's from Neil Strauss, maybe 10 or 20 years old, but it was this guy took like a dive into this underworld of people who just like they're every day they were just like obsessed with the art of picking up girls. And it talked about, so I've heard from other people in speeches and stuff, that if you have one date, but you bring someone to like three different places, there will be a more intimate relationship at the end because you were in three different locations, right? So like if you meet up and you get a drink at this place and then let's go have dinner here and then let's go have a drink after dinner or go get dessert somewhere else. And then maybe you go, you know, sit on the park bench and look at the stars or whatever, like all of a sudden what normally over the course of four dates, you've been to four places in one night, and that's a way to speed things up. And so if we think about that same kind of concept where we're showing up on Instagram and Facebook and inbox, and you know, if you wanted to do LinkedIn or whatever, like when you're showing up in multiple places, which you do a great job of also,
thank you,
that's a way to speed up the timeline to building a relationship with people. And it's not one message 50 times where they're like, oh my God, this thing again, like ignore. It's helpful content, right? It's answering questions. It's helping them with mistakes they might run into. It's telling stories about your customers who were in their shoes, right? So that they resonate and connect with those things. And so you have a bunch of that type of content that can run and promote to people in your audience. And that's how you're going to go deep in the relationship with those people, as opposed to just going wide to the masses.
Yeah. So one of the things that I noticed for myself was when I was showing up in all these other places or all these places, the messaging wasn't necessarily tailored to that specific platform. So if mm-hmm. I put a post on Instagram, I just do like the also add to Facebook thing.
Yeah.
And then I take that same video and I put it over on LinkedIn. So like and I noticed that it all, especially between, because LinkedIn, I have a lot of clients on LinkedIn, and that's where, you know, my mm-hmm. people are. So that's mm-hmm. where my audience is. So I need to make sure I'm engaging there. Mm-hmm. So if I put something on LinkedIn first, what I noticed, and then I saw it on Instagram the next day, like, you know, LinkedIn Monday, then posted on Instagram on Tuesday, the engagement levels for LinkedIn were a lot higher, you know, and then vice versa. So if I put it on Instagram first, LinkedIn was a lot lower, mm-hmm. you know. So
do you notice like if you did LinkedIn Monday, Instagram Tuesday, LinkedIn on Monday got more engagement? If you did Instagram first, would Instagram get more because it was the first one? Like, is it getting more engagement because it's the first time you're posting it, or is it getting more engagement just because they're on separate days?
Well, I think so. It would be the first, whatever one was first. If I posted one on Monday, one on Tuesday, the first one would get more engagement. And I think what was kind of like leading into this next part of my question is, I think that it necessarily is like one of those things where somebody goes on Instagram. Maybe they follow me in both places.
Yeah.
They see it on Instagram. They like it. Right. They saw it first. Then they go on LinkedIn the next day and they see it again. They're like, I've already seen this. And they scroll past. Right. You know, so talk to me about the importance of structuring these messages to these platforms to make sure that when people are going on all these different dates in this one night, they're actually having different experiences, because I think that's
saying the same thing at each place, right?
Right. Like, let's go to this place and have a beer, this place and have a beer, and then this place and have a beer, and then I'll drive you home. That doesn't, I don't think that counts, right? That doesn't count.
Right. And so, this is the answer is, of course, it depends. It depends on your resources. If you have a marketing department that's dedicated to social media marketing, you should have completely different messages that get posted on each platform. Right. Like, if you have the resources to do that, that's the ideal case, right? That you write slightly different copy in each place. Maybe the thumbnail's a little bit different. The video can be it can be the same video clip. But if you are one person who has an hour a week, then go ahead and hit that auto share to all. Right. Like, it's better. That's like we said in the beginning, it's better to show up and be there than not. And then also, when you take into account like the mind the lurkers, again, even though they don't like it in both places, just that omnipresence will help. Now, in the middle is where, slightly change the copy, right? Like, maybe put a different first line. That can be enough of a difference, you know? But that's the best case scenario. It's totally different content on each platform. But at the same time, it's a matter of resources. Also, it depends on your audience overlap. Like, for me, I do not have the same connections on LinkedIn that I have on Instagram that I have on Facebook. They're actually three, or my email. They're four. Like, if I were to do some kind of Venn diagram, like, I would bet maybe 20% of people are in multiple places. And so for me, I feel much less guilty just posting the same thing in different places, right? But then there's also like, all right, what if Twitter's a place where you're hanging out? Like, obviously you can't post the same thing on the three longer form places that you do on Twitter. And so that's why I developed a couple of years ago what I call the social syndication stack, where I would tweet out an idea or a concept, or maybe, new episode, Ham and G's launching, and G's, whatever.
Yeah.
And then, I would screenshot the tweet and put the screenshot onto Instagram, and basically treat the tweet like the headline. And then I'd write a caption on Instagram that kind of outlined that. Then I would share that onto Facebook with more context. And then I would take them all together and put them on a blog post. And so what started out as a simple tweet, one line tweet, became a 350 word article,
Yeah. And I think that's another good point is, when you're talking about the fact that, you have four different audiences essentially on these four different platforms. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of make sure that you're tailoring it. I mean, even if you do something that's the same on one of those, you may not get that much crossover and like the double seeing it kind of thing.
Right.
And I think for me, what I recognized at a certain point was the fact that, the LinkedIn is the home base, like that is where the show was born. That's where my brand is probably the biggest. Mm-hmm. But then over the course of this year, my Instagram page I was like at 100 followers in January. I just passed 700, I think, yesterday. So like, but now I'm realizing like, oh boy, this is another platform where I need, and there's a decent amount of crossover between Instagram and LinkedIn. So that's why I think I see those, spikes on one and then, lulls on the other. But I think that, really trying to, that's why I like the Facebook stuff. I mean, I don't have that big of a following on Facebook. So it's one of those things where I'll put it there for the people that are there, but it's not going to be something where because you said somebody that has an hour a day, that's, or an hour a week, that's me, like that's me when I'm trying to market this show. So I need to try to maximize it. So I'm going all in on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if I get some, double engagement or whatever on these different platforms, so be it. But I need to make sure that I'm like putting that stuff there. And I've gotten a little bit more creative with how I, when I post. So like, instead of posting the same video on LinkedIn and then on Instagram the next day, I always have two. So why not post different ones?
Right.
Then wait a couple days, post the other one and be like, oh, you see this on the other platform. So I think that there's all these different ways that you could be creative with it and try to, you know, maximize the time and effort that you're putting into it. Right.
And another thing too, that we like to do with our brands and with our clients is the cross promotion of content too. Now, obviously Instagram doesn't have the links, but for Facebook, LinkedIn, and email, what we'll do is, you know, sometimes we will write an email and the content's just straight up in the email. There's no links, whatever. It's just good content in an email. And then other times we'll put out an Instagram post that's basically like a little micro blog post, and then we'll send an email, and the email will just be two or three lines, and then click here to read more, and that's goes to Instagram. Or, you know, or on Facebook linking over to Instagram, or on LinkedIn linking over to Instagram, or Facebook, you know, whatever, cross promoting these different channels so that, again, you can tease it and then link to the full thing in another place where you're squeezing more juice out of that initial content, but it's not like copy paste, it's identical.
Right. Okay. So I love that you said that, because I wasn't thinking about this, but this is, I think, a really important thing. So, like, well, let's just take email marketing, because I do it. I send about two emails a week. One's like my Tuesday title tip. And on Thursdays, I highlight the two episodes that I posted that particular week. So my link clicking sucks. It's terrible. Well,
here's the thing. What do you consider sucks? Do you know what it's supposed to be?
I have no, well, I mean, I've learned over time that it's, you know, it should be, well, I don't even know what it should be. So mine, my open rate on my emails is around like 18 to 20% on average.
Right on the money.
Right. Which is like crazy. And my click rate is like 1%. And when I mentioned that in a room with some other marketing people, they were just like, 1%. Like that's pretty much it.
That's it.
You know, and I think that's, it's frustrating. Yeah. But it is what it is, you know. What I mean,
and look, when we have new clients come in who've never done marketing before, and we say like, oh yeah, the email campaign last week, you know, 22%. This one got 18. This one got 27. This, you know, blah blah. And they're like, why didn't it get 100? Like they thought that when you send an email, 100% of the people open and read it. And that's why I said like it feels like it sucks, but it maybe, you know, but does it? And that's, you know, industry standards. These are old numbers that I haven't seen people really update properly, but, you know, general consensus is like 20% open, 2% click through rate is that, and that's a little old. So I would say, depending on your industry, it's going to be a little lower most likely. But it also goes to what kind of relationship are you building with your audience and how deep and engaged are you getting? And so for me, this is the power of having lead magnets for your business instead of just a subscription. And so if someone subscribes to your newsletter, they're not really telling you anything specific about themselves and what they're looking for or what they want, right? So if you say, hey, sign up for my newsletter, I send two emails a week with podcast updates, et cetera. And they're like, cool, I like Mike, I like what he's got going on, I'm signing up. All you know is that they subscribe to your stuff. But if you have a lead magnet that's, you know, the five things every real estate agent needs to know about title insurance, and then they sign up for that, and then you have you can have a follow-up that's specifically for real estate agents about title insurance and about mistakes that they need to avoid. So now you know exactly, like, again, back to the patients versus clients. You're talking to real estate agents. You can use specific language that they're familiar with.
Right.
And you can call them out saying, if you're a realtor in the National Association of Realtors, right? and you can be more specific. And that's how you create real relationships with people, is getting specific with them. That's what creates engagement. And now when you have them coming into your email sequences and you have them following you for a specific reason and they're raising their hand for it, now you know what to talk to them about and how to now add context around your business for them. And then that's how things are going to really increase, right? So if we send an email out to our generic list, we're going to get about that 20 to 30% open rate with a 0.5 to a 3% click-through rate. But when I send an email out, if you sign up for our Marketing 101 ebook, that email has like an 87% open rate and a 65% click-through rate. Why? Because they were expecting it, they wanted it, and it's exactly what, you know, like, it's solving a problem for them that they're looking to solve. So when you can be more specific about what you're sending people and you know more about them, that's going to increase those numbers. So that's why we like building all of our lists through lead magnets, because then we can do it that way. And then, and you see much more open and clicks. And really what that comes down to is you're building a better relationship because they're opening it.
Right. And I think that that's, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of people struggle with is, you know, especially when you're any kind of marketing, is if you send an email, you're wanting them to go to someplace else.
Right.
You know, if you're on social media and you're like, click the link in my bio, they need to go usually go back to your profile, click the link in your bio and go someplace else. So that's that's a lot of steps. You know, and then even like on LinkedIn, when I do my posts on LinkedIn, I've learned over time that links in a post suppress those posts.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't want people leaving LinkedIn. So, but if you put it in the comments, it's just a little workaround. So it doesn't necessarily do anything to the post and the algorithm. But still, to get people to scroll to the bottom and click, you know, the morningspotlight.com, shameless plug.
Yeah.
Like that's hard to do. And it's hard to get people from to go from one place to the other. But I think that's a great point that the more specific that you make it to that person, rather than just being like, here's a generic thing and like hoping to God that you get, you know, like you said, 65% click through rate. I mean, it's just, you know, I think that's really what it comes down to, knowing what the audience is and being able to engage with that audience. So I think that the key takeaway maybe of this episode is know the audience and engage with them, be social, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Get specific and be helpful. And that's going to get them, you know, that's going to get them engaging back. And I think that's a great end note. 45 minutes, man. We went a little long winded today, but I hope it was jam packed with value for everybody. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. If you're interested in some of those free things that I talked about, you can get them at thegrowthsuite.com/free. If you're looking for title insurance, which I know all of our listeners are currently just begging for new title insurance, please go check out Mr. Mike Hamm over at themorningspotlight.com. But he's also got a great podcast that you should check out. Great insights there. And he's great on social. Just check him out as an example of what you could be doing for your business. And until then, we will catch you guys on the next episode.